This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's guest, Guy Daniels, he's a master herbalist. He's also a senior product specialist and science lead for Thorne Research, the manufacturers of professional-grade supplements for health practitioners. They currently are featuring, wisely so, a very promising supplement called Niacel. And I want to get the word out about it because I think it's a very, very interesting supplement that is likely to really skyrocket in the marketplace. And we know that you, intelligent medicine aficionados, want to get ahead of the curve and try things that make sense and are effective. And I think that this is an item that's really ready for prime time. So I want to share information with you. In part one, we kind of laid the groundwork for our discussion. Guy, so additionally, and this is an interesting aspect of nicotinamide riboside, headline, derivative of vitamin B3 prevents liver cancer in mice. Wow, that sounds like an interesting possibility. And it turns out it's nicotinamide riboside.
So nicotinamide riboside, in regards to prevention of cancer, I think the data is pretty clear that there are, again, many, many roles in cancer prevention. The data is a little less clear when there is actually existing cancer. So just to be clear on that picture.
Right. So we're not talking about it as a cancer cure, magical cancer cure. That's not what this is about. But it's something that might help prevent the toxicity that accumulates in certain organs, particularly the liver, that might trigger a cancer event. I guess that's where it's applicable.
Yes. And again, there are numerous levels there. So you have, again, the antioxidant effect, the benefit, the anti-inflammatory, for example, you know, NAD and sirtuins. Positively impact NF-kappa beta, which is the big reason why folks are taking curcumin out there, because that's kind of the top level of inflammation in the body. There's another enzyme, set of enzymes in the body called TARPs, and what they do is they fix damaged DNA, so they recognize a DNA strand break or two, and they upregulate themselves, and they're the first player in fixing of the DNA. So, you know, if you think about damaged DNA playing a role in the eventual development of cancer, that would really be your first level, right, is to be able to fix damaged DNA. So those TARP proteins also consume a whole bunch of NAD as well to fix that DNA. So you can see between the energetics of the cell and the need for energy, the fixing of DNA, the sirtuin enzymes and a couple other enzymes which we haven't even talked about, there's a lot of demand for NAD in the body, especially as we age, and sadly, it's declining as we age.
So I'm going to do a little bit of a lightning round with you because I have in front of me a research paper which has a lot of references, and there's the research on nicotinamide riboside is really exploding, and it applies to a variety of conditions. So let me go through this, and you can comment. Nicotinamide confers neuroprotection versus optic neuritis, okay? Study in 2007. What's up with that?
You got me on that one. I think I skimmed that one. I have probably 100 in my folder. I'm not totally familiar with that study.
I'll tell you why that one interests me, because optic neuritis is sometimes a precursor, like a warning sign that MS is about to develop, multiple sclerosis. And so anything that would protect the nerves in that fashion has appeal in neurological disorders like MS. So, you know, while optic neuritis is not a common disorder, I think it has broader implications for possibly MS. And, you know, it's early in the study of this nutrient, so I think maybe eventually MS trials will be underway. So next case, ischemic brain injury. That's a fancy word for stroke. So what's happening there?
Actually, also showing benefit there as well as resveratrol. So there have been models where, you know, resveratrol was administered prior to, and the benefits were much better than placebo, which would be a sirtuin-driven event. So upon reperfusion, in other words, when, you know, when blood supply returns to that area, you know, there is less damage. And again, a reperfusion injury is, it's kind of like when your hands are cold and you put your hands under hot water and they hurt really badly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
the
whole
the blood comes
that's
back.
A whole bunch of exactly, and that's a bunch of oxidative stress occurring inside your hand. Well, the same, you know, similarly, the same type of thing occurs in the brain. There's a bunch of oxidative stress, and again, the brain's very sensitive to those things. So, you know, you have this again, this ability to have excess free radical scavenging, high NAD, high sirtuin activity environment. And just to take a step back in regards to the previous paper, you mentioned MS. There's quite a bit of references in the literature to the potential treatment of MS using nicotinamide riboside / AD. Again, from what we talked about earlier, just simply protecting the neurons. The neurons are rather energy-demanding, sensitive cells that are again, very sensitive to the supply of NAD.
Mm-hmm. And so what you said is very interesting. It's not so much in a stroke. It's not so much the lack of blood. Of course, the lack of blood can kill cells, starve them of oxygen. But a lot of the damage in the stroke occurs when the blood flow is restored and an area which is already vulnerable is flooded with oxygen. The oxygen normally is welcomed by the cells, but cells that have been hit by a stroke event, once the blood flow resumes, that oxygen becomes like a free radical. And so I guess the idea is not so much that, you know, once you have a stroke, you're paralyzed, you take nicotinamide riboside, you know, you're going to get up and, you know, dance the, you know, the jig. But it's something where if it's on board, you know, that and things like resveratrol and maybe other healthy nutrients, the degree of damage in a heart attack or stroke will be somewhat mitigated. It may destroy less of the heart, less of the brain, and recovery might be facilitated. I guess that's the way that might work.
Yes, it definitely. In that particular scenario, yes, more preventative or protective type of measure. When you look at the model of caloric restriction and sirtuin upregulation with NAD, all those enzymes, the catalase and superoxide dismutase and so forth, all those enzymes that scavenge those free radicals, they're all upregulated. They're all increasing their expression in those states. So, again, to be in the caloric restriction state is a longevity model. It's essentially what's going on in the body is the body saying, okay, I need to adapt and change my metabolism around to survive the day. So you kind of think of it as, you know, you're walking through the jungles, you know, 100,000 years ago, and you either have foods readily available to you or it's not. If it's readily available to you, then you're able to grow, become robust, and reproduce. If it's not, then your body has to change its whole environment around to survive the day. And many of those changes are metabolic in nature, but they're also, again, quenching free radicals, and the list goes on. So the body, in that instance, wants to survive the day to then, again, become robust, and pass on its genome for a later day.
Okay, and I continue the lightning round with an article that talks about traumatic brain injury, the degree of damage. Again, it's not so much once you have traumatic brain injury that you get instant restoration with Niacel, but if it's on board and you have an injury, you're going to have less of a long-term recovery path, according to this study. And so this is a great rationale for, you know, I think NFL football players, maybe our military personnel, should be taking something like this because they're at high risk for TBI, traumatic brain injury, and maybe, just maybe, you know, along with some other things we've discussed, like fish oil, this might mitigate the potential damage.
Yeah, and even, for example, girls who play soccer, there's a lot of concussions going on there as well.
So, hitting the ball.
The model there is, in regards to the concussion study we're doing with Mayo, is a PARP-driven event. So again, that's that enzyme that fixes damaged DNA. So again, that's a very NAD-consuming enzyme to fix the damaged DNA. And so, you know, in that concussion event or that head trauma event, know, you're looking at the DNA for whatever physical reason, having its toll on the structural integrity of the DNA. So that's the model there, which has also been the case in several other models. And the data is very clear on that. I mean, much of the biochemistry we're talking about here, well-known biochemistry, and, you know, not for the brain, but for all these things, metabolism related and so forth, this all goes back to bacteria and yeast. So this is all highly conserved through, millions of years of evolution. And again, this PARP mechanism is, highly protective for, in this case, brain trauma.
Also, Alzheimer's disease, in a recent study in the Journal of Biological Chemistry, a novel mechanism underlying the prevention of Alzheimer's disease. And so this is potentially useful in patients experiencing cognitive decline.
Yeah, so we could probably do an entire show or two or three on dementia and cognitive decline. And anyone could easily make the case that it's an oxidation issue or an inflammation issue or a glycation issue or a methylation issue. And the answer is yes to all the above, to some level, degree, in different people. And so this addresses all those minus the methylation components. So that particular study was a glycation model, in other words, high blood sugar model. So if you're someone who's, say, kind of diabetic or pre-diabetic or metabolic syndrome or whatever you want to label yourself, then you tend to have higher blood sugars, and then that tends to have an issue with the proteins in the body and interferes with their functioning. And so in that particular, again, that study, that model, that was taking a look at sugar metabolism in the brain and also this other protein called PGC1-alpha, which plays a huge role in mitochondrial health. And the nicotinamide riboside, the NiSL, was very, very helpful in that model in increasing the levels of NAD in the brain and also increasing cognitive function and other parameters.
And a segue to that is, I think you may remember this because you've been on the scene for quite a few years. Back in the, I think it was late 80s, early 90s, there was a product called Enada, which purported to raise NAD. We're all very excited about it because we knew that, raising NAD was one of the holy grails of anti-aging and disease management, but it didn't really pan out. It was specifically targeted to Parkinson's disease. So yeah, that didn't work, in my opinion, and it kind of has dropped out of sight. It was popular for a while, but with the resurrection of nicotinamide riboside, or the introduction of nicotinamide riboside as an NAD precursor, maybe we've got a targeted therapy for Parkinson's.
So the Enada product is NADH. So you can give NADH orally, you can give NAD orally, but it's just a very expensive way to really give niacinamide, which is another member of the niacin family. There are enzymes in the gut that break down both NAD and NADH. In fact, excellent sources of NAD and NADH are animal proteins. So you really don't even have to spend your money on an expensive supplement to take NADH. But again, those enzymes in the gut will break it down, and you'll primarily be absorbing niacinamide. And even if it could make it past the enzymes in the gut, there are enzymes in the bloodstream that will break it down. And even if it could make it past that, NAD and NADH are too large of a molecule to be absorbed by the cell. So there is really zero benefit to taking Enada. If you really want to just take something cheap, you could take niacinamide. The problem with taking niacinamide, another member of the niacin family, is niacinamide is the body's most potent inhibitor of sirtuin function.
Uh-oh.
So, and it does some other things as well. It depletes alpha groups and so forth. So you really don't want to be taking niacinamide, in especially in higher doses. Again, the best way to really increase NAD in the body is through the compound nicotinamide or riboside, which is very well absorbed orally, gets into the cells very well, and becomes NAD quite efficiently. So again, it's the body's most efficient way to increase NAD systemically.
Diabetes has sometimes been referred to as a mitochondrial disease, as a disease where there's just a power outage. It's not just a disease where the pancreas is not working up to snuff. That's part of it. But in general, there's sort of a whole sort of energetic problem associated with diabetes. Do you see promise for nicotinamide riboside in type 2 diabetes?
There's huge promise for nicotinamide riboside in really all things metabolic. Again, back to my, you know, walking the plains of Africa analogy, you know, the big things that happen in the body when adapting to an environment without food is the availability to change your metabolism around. So that, you know, these changes occur both inside the mitochondria and also outside the mitochondria. So there is extensive evidence out there that through sirtuins and through increasing NAD in various ways and forms of doing that in trials, that it's highly beneficial for a insulin production in the pancreas, insulin sensitivity in the liver and other peripheral tissues, fatty liver, which is the data on that as well. The list just goes on and of course, mitochondrial function. In fact, in certain models, you can knock out sirtuin 3 function in the mitochondria, which is a big sirtuin there, and in that model, the subjects will instantly develop metabolic syndrome. So,
wow. You
know, there's a clear connection between NAD and sirtuin function in the mitochondria and the development of metabolic syndrome, because eventually the compounds that cause those problems in the mitochondria, they get exported into the rest of the cell and they cause similar metabolic problems. So there's a lot of great, great promise for nicotinamide riboside or niacel in regards to things metabolic. I mean, again, you look at the literature in sirtuins and NAD and niacel, nicotinamide riboside, you're looking at things like decreased triglycerides, increased HDL. And again, all the biochemistry is there, and it can be explained. It's just, it gets a little complicated. But again, there are many metabolic benefits.
And finally, there's a whole host of diseases that we believe are energy deficit disorders, like chronic fatigue syndrome, like fibromyalgia. And, you know, there are many theories on why these conditions arise, and they're probably very heterogeneous. Some of these people might be suffering from infections. Other people might be suffering from nutritional deficiencies. Some people have hormonal problems, neurological problems, on and on it goes, as you mentioned earlier. But is there promise for those individuals by taking something that will upregulate their metabolic machinery?
Well, it certainly can't hurt, and it certainly should be part of the overall equation to help these folks. And as you so aptly put it, there are a whole bunch of reasons why these folks come down with these diagnoses of fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, et cetera. And so, you know, under the proper care of a good practitioner who, you know, is asking the question why, and that's really the big thing. The folks, you know, like us and like others who work in our field, in the functional medicine, integrative medicine, natural medicine field, we ask why. Why is this person ill? What is the root cause of this person's condition or condition? And so that's our main goal, is uncovering the why. If we didn't ask why, we'd just be slinging drugs at people and telling them to come back in a month. So we want to know the why. And this, you know, nicotinamide riboside addresses to some degree the why in these folks, and for some of these folks more so than others. And so if you can uncover whether it's some type of neurotransmitter, adrenal, et cetera, issue, then, you know, you can get part way there. But I think it's very important that, you know, these patients who do have this fatigue, that they do start to get some level of energy back in the short term. And so while the practitioner is uncovering the why, at least in the short term, they're feeling better. And once you start feeling better, and then maybe you can even start exercising more, then you start to positively impact those neurotransmitters if that happens to be the case. And the list goes on from there. So it certainly can be and should be a piece of the puzzle. But again, more importantly, the practitioner and the patient have to find out the why.
Before we conclude, and I know we're going to give this topic a short shrift because our time is limited, you are also an expert on inflammatory bowel disease because you yourself have been challenged with a very dangerous and severe form of inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, and you've managed it via your own dietary interventions, presumably supplement interventions. Can you share a little bit about what your story is with that?
Sure. About 20 years ago, back when I was in my last year of getting my master's in nutrition, I started getting these, you know, occasional bouts of diarrhea. And this went on, and sadly, you know, when you get that degree, there's an awful lot of biochemistry in those courses and, you know, the ability to tear apart clinical data. But, you know, there wasn't a lot of teaching in regards to what, you know, we do as practitioners for a living. And so it took some time to figure it out. And there's a big dietary component to this. There's a big supplement component to this. But I am a statistical anomaly. Most people, after this amount of time, have gone on to surgery. I don't take any drugs. I don't take any corticosteroids or any TNF inhibitors or anything like that. And there are times that it's a more challenge, you know, more challenging to manage than other times. But again, I manage it through natural medicine, through dietary recommendations, or through supplement recommendations. And I know you had me on several years ago. I think we briefly talked about it then. In my book, which is entitled "Reduce Your Healthcare Costs Through Natural Medicine," I've dedicated at least one full chapter to it, and then parts of other chapters to trying to manage inflammatory bowel disease.
Right. Well, it certainly, you know, that's one of my practice focuses, and you know, I really can attest to the fact that diet, certain supplements, can make a big difference in management of inflammatory bowel disease. And unfortunately, that is a neglected aspect of conventional care of these conditions. But I'm pleased to see that after so many years, there was a hue and cry by patients, and ultimately the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America is now undertaking a trial of the specific carbohydrate diet. I mean, I think they probably forced their hand because for so many years they were saying diet doesn't matter, you're wasting your time. But now there's a clinical trial that's underway to validate the efficacy of that type of diet. Presumably you're following some variant of that diet to achieve benefit for yourself.
Yeah, I didn't know they were doing that, so that's good to see. So, yeah, and there are diets a very large component to managing IBD, you probably even more so for the ulcerative colitis patient. And I've had patients who have been to, you know, places like Mass General to no avail, and they come see me, and within a week or two, they're doing fantastic. So, you know, there's a lot going on there, but diet is a huge component to it. And it's one of the big pieces is food allergens. And so, you know, you're looking at things like dairy and gluten as your number one and number two suspects there. So, and there are oftentimes, you know, hidden ingredients or you know, you don't think gluten's in something that's actually in there somewhere. But also other powerful players are histamines. And so you can be consuming foods that are high in histamines or histamine liberators.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a major problem as well. So the treatment of inflammatory bowel disease has a lot of nuances to it. And it's hard to do it justice in about a five-minute conversation. But, you know, I just want to let people know that it's not in your head. I went to see one gastroenterologist after another, and I literally had one tell me it was in my head when there's blood in my toilet.
Yep, and it's so like a stress reaction or something like that.
Yeah, you know, that's insulting, you know, to me and just anyone, really. And others say there's nothing I could do, and others say, here, take prednisone for the rest of your life. And, you know, it takes a strong-willed person. It's a battle. It's always a battle. But when you look at the end, you really don't want to be carrying around a colostomy bag. And so, you know, and there are other nasty things that happen as well, like fistulas, which I won't even get into grossing people out in regards to those and where they can go for women sometimes as well. So you really don't want these nasty, nasty complications down the road. So what I really recommend to the folks out there who are struggling with inflammatory bowel disease is try to get it treated from, again, a practitioner who knows what they're doing sooner rather than later. As time goes on and you have these obstructions, you get these surgeries, and you get these fistulas, there is seemingly, in my experience, less and less that can be done to turn the disease around. If you have a relatively new diagnosis and you haven't had any of these really nasty complications, then there is hope to begin to turn the condition around. But again, it requires a patient who is really dedicated. And, you know, I've had to fire patients in the past because, you know, there was going to be zero compliance in there with the dietary protocol. And that's fine. That's, you know, the direction they want to take, and that's not the direction I take. So, you know, again, there's a lot of nuances. It helps to find a practitioner who is well-versed. I've lived it now for about 20 years, and so I have the wonderful benefit of having walked the walk, if you can call it that.
Your body is your own science fair project on this, for sure. You've tried a lot of things, and you've kept what works. So, okay, in sum, what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? First of all, on the subject of NiaCell, nicotinamide riboside. Where can people find resources?
Probably one of the best places to go is to Thorne.com. Thorne is the company that, again, you referenced earlier, the gold standard in manufacturing in the professional supplement space. You can find some niacinamide information there. And again, you know, do your due diligence. Again, I know there's varying levels of proficiency with the listeners out there, but I think in general they're a pretty sharp crowd if they're listening to your program. And so they can hop onto PubMed. I'm sure they're familiar with that. And just type in nicotinamide riboside and just start reading. You can type in that plus or two and just start reading away. There's a ton of information out there. It can get pretty complicated, which has been the big challenge with nicotinamide riboside because it does require a fair amount of education. So it's not just something that a practitioner or a patient can just grasp and walk away with in a 5-minute conversation. But now the usage of niacinamide is really, really starting to absolutely take off as we continue to educate the folks out there.
Indeed. And I think it is definitely something that is ready for prime time. The research at many institutions across the world is proceeding apace, and I think more and more patients are gaining experience with it and finding it beneficial. Also, information about you. You have got a website.
So if there are any folks out there who are just frustrated with their care from any practitioner, then they're always welcome to contact me at my practitioner email address, which is naturalmedicineguy@gmail.com. Things have just since gotten so busy lately. Really, mostly what I do is education and research, and so I'm not seeing nearly as many patients as I used to, and I shut down the website. So again, it's naturalmedicineguy@gmail.com. And if you're interested in reading my book, which actually does not have any information on nicotinamide riboside, but it does on inflammatory bowel disease and a whole bunch of other topics, again, the name of the book is Reduce Your Healthcare Costs Through Natural Medicine. That's available through Amazon. You can get that in hard copy or digitally. And if for some reason the hard copy says it's out of inventory, don't worry about that. Just order away. The inventory gets refilled very quickly.
Okay, Reduce Your Healthcare Costs Through Natural Medicine. And we'll provide a link to listeners when we post this podcast. Hey, thank you very much, Guy Daniels, for joining us. And the most informative discussion about nicotinamide riboside, also known as niacinamide, which I think is something really worth investigating for many of our listeners, and something that I'm going to continue exploring in my practice. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.